Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Welcome to Valley Roundup. I'm Carolyn Sakariasin. Aspenites elected a new mayor and one council member this week, but one seat remains open and a runoff is underway. Will it matter who throws their support behind the two candidates during their campaigns this month?
And sometimes you get some pretty controversial names on those ads where I look at it and go, wow, I don't know if that helps that person or not.
And it appears that fewer and fewer young people are making it to the polls. Why is that?
People move around, and especially younger people, you know, they're in a unit and the unit gets sold and Airbnb'd and all those things that happen to them. And so they're couch to couch. So it's a little more of a challenge. They've got to make the effort to know that they're not going to get a ballot and then go get the ballot. So it's a little harder on them.
In Glenwood Springs, an arts nonprofit is about to close shop due to fiscal ruin. And yet it is refusing to make public its finances.
Because there is a significant amount of funding that comes from the city, although certainly not all. You know, that's taxpayer money, and the public does deserve to know how their money is being spent.
First, we talk Aspen politics. I'm going to start by welcoming you to the studio. I've got Roger Morrell, he's a columnist for the Aspen Times and the Snowmass Sun, and Mick Ireland, who's a columnist for the Aspen Daily News and a longtime election watcher. And we are under construction here at the Red Brick, so...
To say the least.
Right. So, we had an election this week. Roger, you were one of the hosts on the live coverage of that.
Yeah, that was a new experience for me, and I was really nervous going into it. Didn't know how it would come out. And,
yeah.
You know, just... It's as John Masters pointed out to us, it's a sort of a Aspen tradition that's kind of fun to be a part of.
So, you interviewed along with Lorenzo Semple, your...
Nemesis,
right? He's also a columnist, but you guys hosted and you brought up all the candidates after the results were in, and you interviewed Mayor Skadron. And I found it interesting the question that you asked him about his opponent, Lee Mulcahy, and you said to him, well, if you had had a serious contender, would you have responded differently to the accusations of cronyism and corruption within the city government?
Yeah, because you remember his response to Mulcahy was, you've got a nice hat, or I like your hat, or something like that, which I thought was a classic line in the whole election season. But I just thought if that had been a close race and somebody had accused me of being corrupt and dishonest, I don't think I would have responded that way. So I was interested to hear what he had to say about that.
And what was his response?
Well, he just started to talk about Lee really didn't have anything else to run on, so he took the Breitbart talking points and just went through the list whether they were applicable or not. I think that was a pretty good analysis by Steve of what was going on there.
He said that we're better than this.
Yes.
You know, and having a more elevated conversation.
Yes, and I agree with Steve on that.
Of course, Mick, you've been the target of many accusations, false and true, probably. I mean, you've run. How many times have you run and been elected?
I think I've been on the ballot 11 times.
Wow. That's a lot of energy.
It's a lot of time. And, you know, I think we're fortunate to live in this town for a couple of reasons. One is that was a high-quality candidate field. There was nobody up there playing it for laughs. And, you know, we had that once in a while. You know, the guy with the hat on backwards and the sunglasses making
Dan
jokes. Dan Dunn. You know, the knit hat. But everybody was pretty serious, and it was relatively, but not absolutely free of negativity. And I think any of those people, had they been elected, could serve us well. That's one thing. And another thing is the Breitbart playbook doesn't work here very well. People think it through. You know, and I remember being accused of corruption in City Hall and vote rigging and all kinds of stuff, and people just don't buy it.
Yeah, I don't think there's a payoff for that if you did it in this town. It's just, it's like Lowe pointed out on election night, positions here have not been stepping stones to higher level politics. So where's the gain in corruption and manipulation and things like that? I really think we're lucky that the people who run here, for the most part, really want to serve our community.
Yeah,
it's true, and there's no I was raised in Chicago, you know, and when I was 13, I knew how much money you had to drop with the alderman to get your driveway curb cut and who you had to talk to at the assessor's office and all that. I knew all that stuff, not because we participated, but it was there.
Right.
And we don't have that here. Nobody I know thinks, well, you know, if I just go by ComDev with a check, you know, I can get expedited treatment.
Right.
No. You can't.
Right.
It's too small of a town, and people are too involved for that to happen. If something like that happened, we would know about it within hours.
Yeah, you Absolutely. Can't you can't do anything here without everybody knowing you did it. So.
Right.
It's true.
Or even if you didn't do it. But
yeah.
You know, one interesting observation I had of the election night coverage, which I've never been there live with all that's going on, was the energy level. All the candidates show up. Everybody hedges. They're like, no, I don't expect to win. But you can tell they really do. They're excited to see what the results are and sort of a culmination of their hard work. And it's just, it's really an exciting place to be in Aspen.
Yeah. Were you surprised at the results at all, either one of you? Or
I wasn't.
No, I had printed my power rankings, and I think 30 or 40 votes would have made my power rankings perfect. So, and I cautioned it was going to be close.
Yeah,
people were going to be within 100 votes. So.
The only surprise, I think, was that Ann won on the first ballot. I expected her to be up there, but I thought there'd be a three-way runoff.
Yeah.
I didn't think anybody would get the magic number, but she had a great campaign, and she pulled it off. So congratulations to her. Now she can relax a little bit.
Right. So, Mick, have you been you've been watching elections for a long time. Art Daly lost, and he's an incumbent, and he, in fact, he was the lowest, second to lowest vote getter. Is that unusual for an incumbent to not get the seat again?
No. What voters generally do in a municipal election, and they've done here for years, is they engage in arbitrage. They split the difference. And so they'll pick one incumbent and one non-incumbent. They'll pick one person who's very liberal and not so liberal. They sort of split the difference. And I wasn't surprised. Now, Art, I thought Art was an outstanding candidate and is a great person. But Art fell victim of the Sports Illustrated jinx. And what I call that is when you're running for office and you get on the front page with a feature story that's really about you, it's almost always fatal and terminal. Art had the story about the email. Rightly or wrongly, that was the story.
Yeah.
And it consumed his message.
Yeah, the fact that he hadn't checked his City of Aspen email in the 4 years that he was a councilman.
But isn't it interesting that it didn't come up until the last months of those 4 years? So was anybody really affected by it or concerned about it? I mean, my feeling is no.
Yeah.
Yet it became this great story that, like Mick said, it probably...
It was like the time when Derek Johnson, who I think was a strong candidate, a good council person, and he had a sign on top of the Hickory House, vote for Derek, and it was in violation of city rules.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then he made it worse by not just removing the sign. But he got on the front page, here's the sign. And that's, you get that kind of attention, it's usually fatal.
Yeah.
Yep. So you've got Tory and Ward Hallenstein in a runoff election that leads up to June 6th. Tory got the higher vote count. In your memory, does the top vote getter usually ascend?
Oh, yeah. I actually had an email from Tony Hershey. And Tony Hershey.
There's a name from the past?
Yes. And Tony, and I think Tony and Tory were in a runoff in 2003, and Tory was ahead of Tony, and then Tory went on to win in the finals.
Yeah.
And I can't think of anybody who's ever overcome the distance. I mean, I know that I was in a runoff with Bert, and I was behind, and I knew it was fatal. You know, it wasn't going anywhere. But I campaigned. I felt I owed it to people.
Did that take the steam out of your campaign, just with the knowledge and the database that you have, knowing that the outcome was probably sealed? Was that hard to go out
well,
there?
Well, you know, Roger, you go out and you play the game. And you owe it to the people who gave you money and support and lent you their name.
Mm-hmm.
You owe it to them to go out and make the effort. And that's what I did. I was going out and I was like, this isn't going to turn out well. But
but you got to try.
You got to do it.
That's right.
Right. So do you think, I mean, I was surprised by Skippy Bezerow, newcomer, getting in as many votes as he did. So now what Do you have any sort of outlook as to where those votes fall?
Where do Skippy's voters turn to now that... It's
and art, too, I guess.
You know? Yeah.
Well,
there's a significant number there.
Over 1,000. That's 1,300 voters.
And Ann also. See, Ann's not on the...
Right.
Right.
So
you have people... And I think as a group, those candidates were closer to Tory than they are to Ward.
I've got a question that's sort of related to that. You know, and you may have invented this political ad where you put all the names of your supporters.
Oh, it predates me by a lot.
Oh, it does. At any rate, is it always? I mean, do you put every name on that list? I mean, I notice
what list?
On the list of in your ad, you know, you list all the names of your supporters, and sometimes you get some pretty controversial names on those ads where I look at it and go, wow, I don't know if that helps that person or not. Would you ever edit your list? I guess that's the question.
I never went to the trouble to edit the list and read out the people who are like, you know, Merle Brother or Nick Semple or something. I never went to that length. I suppose you could.
Does it hurt you to have?
I don't think people care that much. I think people like to read those things and get some indication where the community is going. Interestingly enough, Tory had by far the longest list.
Mm-hmm.
But when you analyze it, which I did, the percentage of those people who said they supported Tory who actually showed up to vote was significantly lower than the percentage of people who said they supported Ward on a smaller list who actually showed up to vote.
Was that because they were not Aspen voters?
I figure out who's an Aspen voter for that particular statistic. Yeah. And Ward's support is deeper, but a smaller base. And Tory is a classic, appeals to a lot of people, but they're not as fired up about it.
Yeah.
That was Mick Ireland, columnist for the Aspen Daily News and former mayor of Aspen, along with Roger Marolt, columnist for the Aspen Times. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen, and you've been listening to Valley Roundup, an analysis and commentary of the week's news with writers and editors. We now continue our conversation about this week's municipal election in Aspen. So it was 30% turnout, which is very
38.
Low. 38, which is actually, you know, fairly decent. But I know you've run some numbers, Mick, and you think that registration is up, but the people who are voting are still old, right?
And increasingly old. And it's one of the best comments in the campaign was Ann Mullins, who said, how do you govern in a town without people? Mm-hmm. And so you had that dilemma. And the voter registration rolls, the turnout yesterday was comparable to 2015, but in 2016 we had a presidential, and that packs the rolls a little bit.
Yeah.
So you have a little peaking there. So actually, if you look at it and adjust for that, you see a declining number of people eligible to vote. Not a good thing in general.
It's a little surprising to me just because voting is so easy now, where if you're registered, you're going to get a mail-in ballot, you put a stamp on it, send it back, and
well, if you haven't changed your address.
Yeah, but that's a problem in this town. People move around a lot.
People move around, and especially younger people, you know, they're in a unit, and the unit gets sold, and Airbnb'd, and all those things that happen to them, and so they're couch to couch. So it's a little more of a challenge. They've got to make the effort to know that they're not going to get a ballot and then go get the ballot. So it's a little harder on them. But participation in the under 40 group was pretty weak.
Yeah.
It's very weak.
Yeah, you said voters 20 to 29 voted at less than 30% of the rate they did last year.
Right.
Well, election night, Lo and I made the mistake just based on Skippy's campaign that the youth vote carried him as far as he got. And Mick corrected us. And what was the statistic on the...
Run some numbers here.
The total number of people under 40 who voted the other day or absentee or mailed in was only 500.
Yeah.
So that's not going to fire anybody into office.
Well, what percentage of that under 40 vote do you think Skippy got? Did he carry the majority of that?
It's hard to say. Maybe he did, but even if he did, that's only 250 votes.
Right.
So he gets 789 or whatever that number was, right. And a lot of that's coming from us old guys,
right.
Or middle guys, mm-hmm. Carolyn.
Yeah, that's what's so interesting is the same thing happened with the defeat of Base 2 Lodge. Mm-hmm. They were counting on the young vote there.
Yeah.
You know, let's buy this election with pizza and beer.
Right.
For the 20-somethings and the 30-somethings, and that did not prove to be the case either.
Right.
No, people under 40 simply don't participate in municipal elections at the rate that the older people do. And that's been true for a long time, and it's true for a lot of reasons, and not for lack of registration, because when I do my numbers, I compare. I'm using people who were registered in 2016, so that was there's no excuse there.
Mm-hmm.
But they just don't show for that. They don't have the buy-in. They don't feel that it affects them personally or that it's important.
So they're
not here.
So are we in a cycle there? And you can speak to this, Mick, as somebody who has run many campaigns and has a lot of knowledge about the voting database. You know that the youth vote is not going to carry you into office. So do you neglect, for lack of a better word, that constituency when you're out campaigning?
No, it's an important constituency, and it's important because the older people care about the youth vote. A lot of people, I think, voted for Skippy not because he was young, he is comparatively young, but because they see him as a chance to be more inclusive, to include the concerns of younger people into the system.
Mm-hmm.
And Aspen is one of those, it's an inclusive place. You know, you're running for office, you're gay, you're a woman, you're whatever you are, and if it's not on council, people are inclined to give you a shot,
mm-hmm.
to give you a good look and say, well, you know, we ought to have that diversity because this is not a real diverse town.
No.
Well, I also think there's a huge desire in this town to be young, to be younger than we actually are.
Right.
So maybe...
I think obsession would cover that.
Yeah.
Right.
So maybe Skippy kind of captures that vote a little bit. I don't know. People... just wanting to be in that demographic.
Right. Do you have any predictions on what the conversation is going to be now for the next 30 days between Tory and Ward Hauenstein? I mean, do they have any differences?
Oh, well, they do. Ward brought forward the petition to defeat the hydro plant, the Castle Creek Energy Center. And Tory was on the other side. And that's... a significant difference.
And was he on the council then?
Yes. Tory sort of endorsed it.
Well, Tory gets out there a lot, too. Tory knows a lot of people. He's a really accessible guy around town.
Right.
So, I mean, I think people generally like him.
Yeah.
And people like Ward, too, but I don't think Ward has the day-to-day presence out in the mall or on the street that Tory does.
I think that's right. I think it comes down to people sort of acknowledge that Tory is a good guy, loves his community, he wants to be a part of it, he has great enthusiasm for whatever it is we're doing. Mm-hmm. And Ward is bringing a different set of ideas. He's more about a set of ideas than about a personal connection to the community.
Yeah, there's a Tory, too. I think his name, Tory, gives him a little notoriety.
Well, you know, they said they were looking forward to a runoff. I know they're lying.
Yeah, for sure.
I know that. I mean, I saw Ward Hauenstein's ad in the paper a week and a half ago saying, just elect me so I can go to Moab, but my hands are tired from knocking.
Yeah.
And Tory's done this now. This will be the third time, and it's exhausting.
Oh, so, it gets really old.
Right?
It just does.
So how does that feel? I mean, you're excited that you're in the runoff, but you're... a little disappointed that you got to get out there and pound the pavement again.
Well, it's a great argument for instant runoff voting, which actually worked.
Right, it did. And that was only for one cycle, right? One election cycle that we did that. It was a ranking by popularity.
Mm-hmm.
I
ran for mayor and I was elected under three different
scenarios.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, good. All right. Well, thank you for coming in. It's all the time we've got.
Always a pleasure.
That was Mick Ireland, columnist for the Aspen Daily News and former mayor of Aspen, along with Roger Marolt, columnist for the Aspen Times. And I'm Carolyn Zachariasen, host of Valley Roundup. We now go to Glenwood Springs to find out what's happening there. I've got Carla Jean Whitley, the features editor at the Glenwood Post-Independent, on Skype. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So you've had some pretty big news down there. It's an ongoing story regarding the Glenwood Springs Center for the Arts and the financial turmoil they're going through. So it sounds like that nonprofit is going to close because of financial troubles and the executive director resigning under questionable circumstances. What do you know thus far?
Well, right now it does look like the organization is likely to close in mid-May. They are in significant debt. I believe it would be something like $68,000 to pay off all their vendors and teachers for what they have worked up until this point. So if they are able to pay off that debt and find funding to go forward, then they would be able to continue operating. Simultaneously, the center is being investigated by the Glenwood Springs Police Department, and we don't know much about that investigation because it is active, but we do know it's financial in nature.
Right. And then there was a opinion piece, a guest opinion, published on May 1st in your paper, mm-hmm. and it came from the board.
Yes.
And they said that they thought that until April of this year, they thought the organization was financially viable with a modest fund balance, but that's not really the case.
It's not, and we continue to seek more information on how exactly this discrepancy came about. We learned last week, they told us that they have about $5,000 in the bank, and certainly that's not a lot of money given the amount of debt on the table.
Right.
And so the current board was installed in January. My understanding is there are a handful of members who were on the board previously and have stepped into different positions, but then there are also a number of new members. And so we are working to understand that exactly how things got to this point, and whether this has been a long-standing problem or what exactly is going on.
We are also trying to do the same at Aspen Public Radio. And, you know, I asked last week, prior to the press releases coming out first, that the city was going to, that they're not going to give any more money, right?
Correct. That is correct.
They were giving $50,000 to the organization to pay for the executive director. Plus, it has a contract with the nonprofit for, mm-hmm. I think, the space that it rents, it uses.
Yes, they do rent from the city. I believe last week one of the teachers told me that there are 5 years on the lease, but the lease is $10 a year.
So yeah. When the city's press release last week said, you know, we don't have any financial oversight of this organization, mm-hmm. and so it's all on the board and that organization. Then the other press release came out saying that we're going to close. And mm-hmm. so I asked through their counsel, I wanted the financial documents for all of fiscal 2016 and then year to date. And the lawyer, Charlie Williams, said that, and that was, I did that under Colorado Open Records Act. And he wrote back and said that the organization wasn't subject to what's known as CORA. It's the acronym for Colorado Open Records Act. And I begged to differ and said, no, this is, you know, the city gives money to this. Plus, in your tax rolls are on with the IRS and you have donations. So mm-hmm. you I do believe that you do fall under that. And even if you don't, the public ought to know where the all the finances come from and the tracking of it. And I have yet to get that. I've asked almost every day since last mm-hmm. week for that information, and I keep getting stonewalled. So the public, you know, we're never going to get that, see what's happening without that transparency.
Right. And I certainly think, you know, because there is a significant amount of funding that comes from the city, although certainly not all, you know, that's taxpayer money, and the public does deserve to know how their money is being spent. But then also, I agree with you regarding transparency, that being able to understand how an organization is spending its money, for me as an individual, that certainly has an influence on where and how I donate.
Absolutely. And they have to, you know, they have to make up this deficit. And mm-hmm. one of the ways they're going to do that is through this event that's coming up, the Dancers Dancing
yes.
event. So, and they're hoping to recoup quite a bit of money. So I, again, it's one of those things like, well, I'd really like to know what the financial, tracking mm-hmm. what the finances before, you know, giving more money to the organization. I hate to say that, but it's making people question. And what the right. what's the secrecy here? What's not adding up for me is in that guest opinion, they said that they released the 2016 annual report with pride to the public. And so mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have seen that and if it has any financials in it, but one would think that they would just hand that over as one of
right.
the, to, you know, as a, to appease the request.
And so now, there are still a lot of questions here.
There's more questions being, I think, raised as the answers aren't coming.
Yeah.
You know, and then the Glenwood Post Independent had a story about how the city's taking over the music program for
yes,
the summer.
The Summer of Music will go on.
Okay. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that? Like, that was a Glenwood Center for the Arts endeavor?
Yes. So Glenwood Springs Center for the Arts was the presenter of this event for, I believe, the past 6 years. They took it over after another organization dissolved. And the city has announced that the Summer of Music will go on. In fact, many of my friends have said to me in the midst of all of this, but what about my music? What about my music?
Yeah.
And so I know they'll be glad to hear this as well. But the city had already considered a grant for the center for this program, and which the program costs more than $100,000 a year to put on according to the grant application. And so there it is really an event that relies quite a bit on sponsorship and donation. The city's $20,000 tourism grant, of course, is only a part of that, from what I understand.
Sure.
But the city has stepped in and ensured that this will happen, and the contracts are already signed, deposits have been paid, sound engineers ready to go, so we can look forward to that come June 28th.
Good. I was going to say, when does it start? June 28th and runs through the summer, through August?
Yes, it runs through August 2nd, and it's on Wednesday nights.
Okay, and you can get the lineup on your website?
Yes, it's on postindependent.com.
And then you had another story regarding, you know, the bridge is, every week we talk about the bridge because every week there's new news about the bridge. And they're trying their hardest, I know, to try to get people mm-hmm. out of their cars. And so there's a new effort through bike riding.
Yes. So this Monday, the Ride Garfield County Bike and Bus Challenge kicked off. And that is part of the effort to encourage people to ease traffic congestion. So if we have fewer people in cars, then the bridge construction should be a little less painful. The bridge doesn't close until August 14th, but the idea is that if we go ahead and get in the habit of these things, then we'll be in a much better position when that time comes.
Great. Awesome.
And, you know, yesterday I rode my bike to work, so I'm trying to do my part.
Okay, well, good. Thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Always glad to do it.
That was Carla Jean Whitley, features editor for the Glenwood Post Independent, speaking with me via Skype. Thanks to her and my other guests this week, Mick Ireland, columnist for the Aspen Daily News, and Roger Merle, columnist for the Aspen Times. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen, and you've been listening to Valley Roundup. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on this show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.